Mini episode 1742 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 1742 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with our spoiler-free review of the Netflix documentary, The Devil Next Door. Here's our top five things to know about this program, which is more timely than ever given the Ukraine war and decades-long suspicion held by the Ukrainian community in America about Russian interference in the U.S. justice system. Number five. The documentary unfortunately gave short shrift to the origins of the case in the 1970s. Not that you'd know it from the show, but the case originally lingered for a decade plus domestically before John Demjanjuk was deported to Israel. These were the formative years of the case in America when the divisions that the KGB sought to sow between the Ukrainian and Hebrew communities in America really took root. The case had tremendous novelty as the one huge challenge to citizenship of a suspected Nazi war criminal in all of the decades of post-war life. Number four. The most extensive and best-covered part of the documentary covered the several-year period of Demjanjuk's stay in Israel, from the lengthy preamble to the trial itself, to the conviction, to the reversal by the Supreme Court. Of all of the fascinating angles to this chapter, perhaps the most interesting concerned the controversial and self-aggrandizing Israeli lawyer Yoram Shechtel. It's certainly the most compelling part of the story, as a man accused of horrific war crimes comes face to face with many Holocaust survivors. The curveball of his conviction being overturned, saving him from the gallows, adds another layer to one of the most controversial and disputed stories of our time. Number three. Yet again, Demjanjuk's time back in America between trials, which lasted over a decade and a half, got glossed over. Granted, it doesn't have the high drama of the actual trials, but more of a look at his attempts to live a low-key life in the aftermath of the worldwide media coverage of his trial, with the government's attempts to deport him ongoing, would have been very interesting. Number two. Demjanjuk's last chapter, in Germany, being tried as an alleged war criminal, was more compelling and detailed. As if to clinch this case as forever disputed, Demjanjuk passed away while appealing his conviction, leading him to end up officially classified as innocent despite his conviction, since a quirk of German law dictates this outcome when a person expires with a case under appeal. Number one, unlike making a murderer, the presentation of the case is pretty neutral and even-handed, and yet, the layout of the case seems fairly damning to Demjanjuk. I'm going to break format a bit here, since I don't usually delve into first-person framing of my opinions and perspectives in these reviews, but this one demands it because of my personal history. I grew up in the next suburb over from Seven Hills in the Cleveland area, close enough to know people who knew people, so to speak. The framing of Demjanjuk as a victim of Soviet persecution was persuasive to me, and some of the shadier elements of the way that the U.S. government pursued him conditioned me to see the second Demjanjuk trial as classic double jeopardy. But after watching The Devil Next Door, I came away with a different perspective. I got the sense that he was guilty of what they convicted him of in Germany, and it made me feel regretful for having ever believed in his innocence. It's hard to put my finger on exactly why. Perhaps it even stemmed back from watching Making a Murderer, when it seemed beyond doubt that local authorities tried to frame Stephen Avery, but the concept of potentially framing a guilty man seemed plausible for the first time. In other words, just because they're framing you, it doesn't mean that you're innocent. Additionally, the way that Demjanjuk and his family played the feeble old man card seeming to suggest, whether they meant to or not, that there ought to be a statute of limitations for the murderous charges, was very off-putting. Make no mistake about it, this case is very unsettling because either way there was a grave miscarriage of justice. If Demjanjuk was innocent, then everything done to him was completely wrong. If, however, Demjanjuk was guilty, then his 37-year legal and personal ordeal doesn't even come close to making amends for the evil that he perpetuated. And of course, his innocent family suffered either way. For anyone coming into this case with less familiarity than me, which probably constitutes most of this audience, the perspectives that they take away are fascinating for me to consider. You really have to make up your own mind from what is presented here, which, given the legally inconclusive way that the case ended, seems entirely appropriate. Thank you for joining us for this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.